Welcome to Mulling It Over with Brandon Mole.
Hi, I'm Brandon Mole. I'm a number one New York Times bestselling author of a bunch of fantasy series like the Fablehaven series and many more.
And I'm Jason Conforto. I'm a filmmaker, a podcaster, and game designer. In this podcast, we're excited to share our love for story and our passion to create.
We hope to share a bunch of experiences and lessons learned over a lifetime in creative fields.
Today, we're joined by Ali Condi. Ali, thanks for being here today.
I'm delighted. Thanks for having me, you guys.
Yeah, we're excited to get to know you a little bit more and hear a little bit about your writing background. And do you want to just take a second and tell us a little bit about what got you into writing and how that all started for you?
Yeah, so I feel bad for Brandon because he's heard this before at a million conferences.
No, this is great. No, this is great.
But I was one of those kids like that always wanted to write. Not necessarily, I didn't even know really about being a writer, but it's just the way I made sense of the world. I think kids are born with like kind of a way that they want to like I said, like make sense of the world. So some kids, for some kids, that's like painting or drawing a lot. And all of us, the great thing about being little is you do all of it a lot, but you kind of tend to gravitate towards something. And yeah, it can be sports, it can be music, it's whatever it is. And I kind of gravitated toward writing or maybe even storytelling in the sense that like before I could write, I had my babysitter take dictation. I would sit down and tell her a story and she would write the story down. And I'm not an extrovert. I kind of have to be for my job. I wasn't like, I'm going to take this to everyone. I just wanted it to exist.
Right.
And so I could look at it again or think about it again, and I couldn't do it myself. And then when I learned to write, I would write stories all the time.
So how young were you when this all started?
Like 3 or 4.
Okay, like super
yeah,
young.
Yeah, that's very focused, very young. I mean, for me, I was a massive daydreamer as a little kid.
Yeah,
But not a communicator. I wasn't.
At three, you weren't trying to get your record down of, no, of your stories.
Or at 4 or 5. It was just like selfish. It was just in my head, just going round and round. Yeah, but keep going.
Yeah, no, I think mine was selfish too. Like I really did just want it for me.
Yeah.
And so I just wanted to, I think I understood that I would lose it. Like I'm a spacey enough person that if I didn't have it down, I wouldn't remember that thing that I was daydreaming about kind of. And I wanted to trap that in glass. There's that great Ann Patchett quote in her. So she has a book called The Story of a Happy Marriage, and it's actually about writing. Like writing is the happy marriage had.
Yeah.
So she has all these essays about writing, but she describes the idea. Like you get an idea for a book or an essay or whatever it is. And it's like this really beautiful butterfly. And then in order to write it, you have to kill it. Like you have to trap it and pin it down and you lose a little of the magic of it, but then
the life.
And she's like, and she's a beautiful writer, but she's like, even my best books, I kind of feel like that happened just the tiniest bit. And she kind of feels like the idea phase is really special. And I agree with that. I feel like that too, but I also like the trapped phase. Like I don't love it. I wish you could just have it be magic in all forms, but I like that you can look at it again.
That's pretty cool. That you can preserve it and share it and do things you can't do when it's flying free.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting that at 3-4 years old, you already had enough experience to know, because the way you're describing it, you probably had a story that entertained you that you lost. Right?
Yeah.
Otherwise,
I'm sure
why would I care? That it would be lost. I think that sounds very young to have that. Really cool to have that experience and realize that young.
Oh, thanks. I mean, I was a weird kid. Like most, well, maybe Brandon wasn't weird. Most writers were kind of.
I'm sure Brandon was weird.
I was especially weird. You probably wouldn't have been very nice to me.
No, I would have.
Most people weren't.
No, I think you would have been. I think I would have thought you were great. Like, actually, there was a. Brandon blurbed my novel, Summer Lost, which was a huge honor for me. It was my first middle grade. It was a big deal. I knew he was busy. I was scared to ask him. And he said, the quote, now that, of course, I can't remember it verbatim, like I usually can, but the blurb he gave me was like, I wish I could be friends with the characters or I would have been friends. Do you remember?
Yeah.
And I feel like we would have been friends.
Yeah.
Like, I think the weird kids find each other. And yeah.
That's true. Like, that, the personalities that were coming through in Summer Lost were like, oh, I could have been friends with these people. It was very, it connected to me in a personal way that was my reaction, right? My reaction was like, and what a beautiful thing if your characters invited someone into wanting to have a relationship with those characters. I mean, that's the... probably the biggest compliment you could give a character, right?
Right. And yeah. I mean, I feel that for your characters, and my kids have felt that with your characters. So, I mean, you've definitely done that in spades.
So when was it when you realized, hey, I can turn this into a life or a career or at least a hobby that I'm taking seriously? When did that switch for you?
So it just was the thing I always wanted to do the most after I was, like, when I'd get home from school, I wanted to write. Or, like, I kind of would decompress by writing stories, and then I'd do my real homework or whatever else. So it was mostly just fun for me, or, like, I did feel a bit compelled to do it. Not in a bad or driven sense, but just, ooh, you know. And I had this grandma who was awesome. And I went to her house every day after school because my parents both worked. And she noticed this, that I was always doing this. And so she had a really cool old mid-century desk with a ton of drawers and, like, slots for letters and stuff. And she cleared out one of the drawers and said, this is a drawer where you can put all your writing that you do, and I'll never open it unless you tell me I can. And I'll never read anything in it unless you ask me to. And what a gift to give a kid, right? Yeah. I was like,
so magical.
It was so magical, and I totally trusted her. So I'd go home and go to her house, I guess, sit at the desk, write for a while, then I'd go get my snack and do other kid things. But I always loved going there right after school. And she passed away, and she left me the desk, so I actually still have it, and it still creaks the same.
Do you ever work from that desk?
I don't. Like, it's, I have another one that I had to get before, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm.
You're like, I've got a real desk.
No, but that one feels like a magic desk.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I do like to look in it and organize, and I put papers and stuff in it, and it's kind of fun. But so she was super encouraging. And then I had a teacher in seventh grade who I was just writing fun stuff for, and she said, you are good at this. You should do this. And I remember thinking, oh, huh. Like, could I do this as a job? And I was really fortunate because my mom is not a writer, but she's a really creative person, and she's a visual artist. She was an art professor at SUU, and she still exhibits in galleries and has shows all over,
awesome.
Stuff like that. And so I realized, like, watching her, I think I was just absorbing that all along. Like, you can be a creative person and make a career out of it, but her career was teaching. And so that's when it started to click for me, like, oh, my family's super practical. Like, I was never thinking, oh, I'm going to be an artist. But I thought maybe I could be a teacher and write.
Yeah.
Like, that would be, even if I was just, I don't know if I even made the jump to I could be an author. I was just like, I could still write as a teacher of English. I could still write with the students. I could read their writing. I could be in conversation that way. And then I did read, so everyone knows about Anne of Green Gables, right? And then there's also a book called Emily of New Moon by the same author. And in that book, it's like this young girl in Canada who wants to be an author so bad. She lives on Prince Edward Island, and it's about her struggle. So she's like sending in poems and they get rejected. And finally, when she's, I can't remember how old, like 16, someone wants to publish her poem, but they want to put it on a brand of flour, like on a flour bag. So they add this whole verse about flour in it. And she's like, oh, well, it's $10 and at least it's out there. You know, like we end up... We end up like kind of relating to that as writers later. So I think that was pretty influential too, that series, that it's the Emily series, but Emily of New Moon is the first book.
And was there any sort of barrier for you thinking, there's just not a place for women in writing, or had you had enough role models, female role models where you're like, yeah, I can do anything. This is for me, and this is what I'm going to do.
That's such a great question. I mean, it's harder for women in just about every field, and writing is no exception. It's interesting in the children's industry because there are a lot of female writers, there are female editors, there are female agents. Like,
yes, tons.
Tons, like, tons,
like,
and tons.
Like, I feel like a minority when I'm in that world. Yeah.
Yeah, and you are, like, in a way. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I mean,
if you go by percentages,
if you go by like male female percentages, we're both white, so we're pretty high percentage, like, we're fine
in that way. Yeah,
that way we are. There's a lot of I think the diversity movement has been amazing, so I think that would have been way harder. Like, I don't feel like the field was nearly as diverse as it, I mean, it should have been, but so I was really fortunate. Like, I have to speak to that privilege,
right?
Like, I was also, like, lucky in that way, I guess, or just it's interesting. But I did see a lot of women. So I felt like the literary world was not for me. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm just a girl. No one wants to read. But the children's literary world was more open. Like, the adult literary world, I guess is what I mean to say, felt very, like, white dude writing about His feelings, you know, like that felt more intimidating. But I had gotten a background in education at BYU. I was an English teaching major, and I loved teaching. And so I taught high school, and it was so fun. And when I stopped teaching to have kids and do some other stuff, I wanted to write a book for those students. And so that felt like I can do this. Like, there are a lot of women writing YA. There's a lot of female characters that I felt like I could get or understand. So that part didn't feel
like
a barrier.
What year was that when you were?
My first novel came out in, 2007. Is that when Fablehaven came out?
2006.
Okay. Yeah. We were right around the same time. I mean, Brandon was doing the national market, and at that time I was just doing the Deseret Book Market. But yeah, where I did feel like as a woman it was tough, particularly as a woman maybe in LDS culture, was my career was never on the front burner. And I don't say that to be dismissive or grumpy, or I really wanted to be a parent. I really was excited about that. But it wasn't like, oh, you want to be a writer? Let's make that happen.
Right.
It was like, cool, that's a fun thing for you to do.
If you can fit it in.
Yeah. And that's where the tough part comes in a little bit, yeah. I think.
That part would be so tough because it's not the kind of thing that's easy to fit in. It's hard to do it as your main thing, you know?
Yeah. And I had been putting my then husband through graduate school as a teacher. And then when we started having kids, which again, totally on board with, wanted to do it, thrilled I did. Yeah. But I had to quit teaching, but I had to keep supporting or helping support the family. And he was working hard, you know, he was in grad school, but we moved into a sorority and I was the house mom of a sorority. So I have my two babies and I have 40 girls I'm living in a house with that I'm in charge of. And I'm just trying to write around the edges. So that was hard. And I don't know that always, but often men authors are fitting it in around a career or whatever, but I don't know that the level of caregiving is always the same or the level of, if that makes sense.
Well, like you said at the beginning. I can speak to me, which was, I wasn't giving the same level of care as my wife was in the home, and that opened me up to have a little bit of flexibility. And also Mary, who was my wife at the time, was supporting me and creating time to help me hold down a full-time job and also to write on the nights and weekends. You know?
Yeah. But didn't Mary give you like a full year to write a book? And that's a huge support.
Right after I graduated, she gave me a year to just write.
Wow.
You know, as just like a gift. And that's when I wrote what was Beyonders, or what turned into Beyonders. And no one wanted to publish it at the time, but like,
I love Beyonders. Yeah, like that was...
but it let me write something... Let me write a novel. You know what I mean? And then Fablehaven was written while working a full-time job and did it on nights and weekends or whatever.
But you kind of taught, like, both of us, because I do have a master's degree in creative writing, but I had never taken a creative writing class until 2017. Sorry, 2015, the year I started the master's degree.
So you were already a published writer before you started the master's program.
Yeah. And we should definitely talk about that too, but also, Brandon, like, we had to teach ourselves how to write.
Yes.
Like, and so you taking that year to do that isn't time unspent, like misspent.
No,
yeah,
no,
you
no.
taught yourself how to write. You taught yourself your process. Like,
it was time very well spent.
Yeah.
And we reaped dividends from that, I think, for the rest of our lives. Because like that was when I did the hard work of writing my first novel, you know, which is like a, you know, it's a backbreaking thing to do that for the first time. At least it was for me.
Oh, it totally is.
Because you're trying to do this huge feat that you don't know how to do.
That you've never done before. Yeah. And it's a book that's never been written before. Yeah.
And you're kind of going, wait, what is this that I'm doing anyway? Like you're trying to figure out what is a novel as you write your first novel.
Yeah.
I remember, because definitely I want to get into the education side of this, because you did some stuff with your creative writing masters to formally prepare yourself to write better, or to formally train yourself to write better. And I'm super interested in that. I'm partly interested because when I was at the end of college, I had a creative writing teacher at BYU named Doug Thayer.
Yeah.
And when I went to him and was like, look, what I want to do is write books. And what do I need to go get a master's? What do I do? And he's like, look, if He's like, if your main goal is to write books, mostly you just have to get good at writing books.
Yep.
Like you know, he's like, if you want to go teach, you better get your darn master's. You know what I mean? Like if you want to go teach this at a high level, go get your degrees. But like, and that was part, and I still applied to the master's in creative writing at U of U. I applied to it, and I didn't get in. And when I didn't get in, I was like, meh. I'm just going to take that as my answer from the universe to just figure it out on my own. But like, but there was always a part of me that was like, look, I hear what he's saying in that if you turn in a good book to a publisher, they don't care what your degrees are. They just care about the book. But if that creative writing master's helps you write the better book, it is time well spent. And so what was your experience with that?
Yeah, so I would totally agree with you and with Doug Thayer. Like, to write a good book, you need to learn how to write good books, and you can learn that by writing. You know, you don't have to have the MFA.
There's lots of ways to maybe get there, but something that could help.
Yes, and for me, it did. So I went back, like I said, in 2015, and at that point, Match had been out for 5 years, and that remains my biggest seller, my only book.
How many books do you have published at that point?
So I had 5 with Deseret Book. And four, nine.
Okay,
four,
nine books.
Four with Penguin. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I had 9 published books. I had written Summer Lost, but it wasn't out yet. So I had written another novel that wasn't released, but it was under contract. And so I realized the reason, I went back for a few different reasons, and some of them are personal. I hope that's okay if I share
please.
As well. I won't get too personal, but yeah. I'd always wanted to get a master's degree. I came from a family that really valued education. My dad has a JD, he's a judge, and my mom had a master's degree in art. And it wasn't like a prestige thing. It was just my dad had to do law school to do the job he wanted to do, but they both were very practical, like I said, and my mom wanted to teach, but they also really loved learning. Like, they were like, if you can get more learning, why wouldn't you? And so I put that all on hold. I actually thought I would get a master's degree in education because that was my focus. I put that on hold to have my family. And then I have a son with special needs. Brandon knows a bit about this. And I was at his school one day, his special needs school, and a mom with an older child said, you better do, she was just saying, teenagerhood is crazy for everyone. And it can be really hard for neurodivergent kids. And she was like, if I had any advice for you, while he's still sort of pliable and young at that point, so 2015, he would have been 12, go do it. And so I thought, now's my chance. Like, I should do this master's degree. And just in case it's interesting for anyone else out there considering, I thought I could maybe apply for the MFA program at BYU, which would make sense because I lived closer to BYU. But sure. I felt like I'd already had... I had had a BYU experience and I loved it. I loved being an undergrad at BYU, but I wanted to do something just a little different. Yeah. I didn't want to get
all and get new professors too.
New professors, right? Yeah. New experiences. And so the Vermont College of Fine Arts, it's now under the Cal Poly umbrella, which is actually pretty great. But they had one of the only MFA programs in writing for children and young adults. And I didn't want to spend 1 minute defending writing for children and young adults, like sometimes happens in some master's programs where you're a little bit like lesser. And I hate to say it is true of some programs. I just wanted to hit the ground running, like be in a place where people were excited about writing for kids. And like, this is valid and awesome, and we're going to help you do it better. So that was one of the reasons. And I also chose it because it was a low residency program. So for me as the mom of young kids, it was easier. It wasn't easy. It was really hard to have my mom come up and help my then husband with the kids for 11 days twice a year than to get out the door every day, if that makes sense.
So you were only on campus 11 days a year, and then it was remote the rest of the time.
Yeah.
And made that possible for you to be a mom and a writer and a student.
Like, it was brutal to leave for 11 days. The first time I went, I cried in my dorm room, and I was like, well, it's too embarrassing to go home now, but I will not finish this. I will
And they were 11 days straight?
Yeah. I'd never been apart from my kids that long. Yeah. It felt bananas. It felt like, what on earth am I doing? But yeah, and another reason I went back was I felt like I want to learn how to be a better writer. And I feel like I've self-taught myself a lot, but I would love to know more. And I did go back, like Brandon was a little bit alluding to, I wanted to teach again. I missed teaching. I love teaching. At that time, I didn't see it really happen. There was no immediate thing that could happen. You know, I wasn't like doing it with necessarily an eye to that, but I was realizing as I was workshopping and doing things that I knew how I wrote, but I didn't yet have the vocabulary to teach other people to write. And I wanted to have that mm-hmm. experience and vocabulary and like knowledge so that someday I maybe could do that.
So you were thinking more getting an education for being a teacher more than being continuing your career as an author? Or
it was actually even. Maybe not perfectly 50, but sure, like sure. both but of those things weighed on.
Valued.
Yeah, both of those things were things. As I looked at my life, I was like, I want to teach and I want to write and I want to get better at both.
Yeah, I had a similar experience early in my career where I had to go back east for a couple weeks on a film shoot, and leaving my wife and little kids behind, it was looking back on my entire life, it was some of the loneliest moments of my life, just being, and it was 2 weeks in Tennessee, 2 weeks home, and then two more weeks in Tennessee, and so it was like 4 out of 6 weeks just being gone. And It's so, and I know you've experienced that, Brandon, on the road and doing that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I'm sure you have, yeah.
And I'm sure all the truck drivers listening to this podcast are like, you amateurs.
Well, they are one of our biggest demographics, so.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. Like, whenever I complain about stuff, I think.
There's always
I'm such a whiner, yeah.
I remember there was a neighbors that we had during the time, and her husband was deployed. And I was complaining to them. You don't know how hard it is to be away for 2 weeks at a time. But
all we have is our experience.
Right.
And for you, that was your experience. Yeah. Jason, that was your experience.
Pain is pain. And loneliness is loneliness. And whether it lasts a few hours or a few decades, like, it's still pain and it still hurts. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
So Allie, did you get what you wanted out of this program? Like, what was the experience and what was your takeaways of the value of it?
Yeah, I did. So the instructors were amazing. And that was such a privilege to learn from and workshop with, like, Kekla Magoon, who is a brilliant writer, and Martine Leavitt, who I think is a genius. There were just so many authors, and they were great teachers too. So that was awesome. And that was a real gift, and to learn from them and workshop so much with each of them, because there's so much workshopping. You're learning not only how they are as writers, but how they are as teachers. So it really was giving me examples of different ways to teach, different things to say, different ways to react to manuscripts. It was amazing.
What kind of stuff were you taking from it? Like, are there any any takeaways you can encapsulate for us? Like I really learned.
Yeah. And there were concrete things I learned as a writer too. So one of them that I think about all the time is, one of my professors said, if you are having trouble ending a chapter, you've probably written past the ending. And that was just a small thing, and I think about it and use it all the time.
Yeah, like, that's a really good one.
Yeah, because and it's not 100% accurate or on the nose every time, but mostly, I've realized, I could have just stopped with this. I've written past it. I'm trying to circle back around to it, but I already said it.
It's part of that enter late, leave early, right? And we do that in documentary editing and whatnot. But I think it's the same in writing chapters and stuff. It's you don't want to come into the scene too soon, and you don't want to overstay your welcome, right? Once you're done, you're done.
Yeah. And another thing I learned from that was, my characters have a tendency, or they did. I hope they don't as much anymore. But someone said, why are your characters? And also my fellow workshoppers showed me no mercy. They didn't care that I was published, because they might have been a little worried about it from the jump, but the minute they saw my unworkshopped material, they were like, oh, she's like the rest of us. She's like us. She's not special. But someone said, why are they always walking to a place having a conversation? Why aren't they just in the place? And I thought, oh my gosh, I do that all the time, where they're walking along. Because I love like a good walk and conversation, apparently.
Walk and talk.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So those were a couple of things that.
So one of the things, like the walk and talk, is just people are helping you see your patterns.
Exactly.
So you're like, oh yeah, I want to. There's nothing wrong with a walk and talk, but if it's every time, you're like, oh yeah, I want to break up that pattern.
Right, and like do something different, challenge yourself. Don't always go back to your go-tos. So.
And it's so valuable when you get a principle that you haven't been incorporating, mm-hmm. or that gives you like language or a way to think about it. Yeah. And like that ending the chapter, like, man, like that one's going to help me. Just hearing that thought said that way is different than I've heard that thought said. And I know it's going to help me. And that's partly why I love talking about principles.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so fun.
Do you see a difference in your writing pre-master's degree versus post-master's degree? And enough so where your audience is probably like, oh yeah, like there's a big difference or not so much.
I think, yes, I think I see a big difference in that. Before then I just wrote YA, mm-hmm. and middle grade actually too, but now I write picture books because I learned about writing picture books. You know, I have 2 published picture books and 3 contracted picture books. I wrote an adult novel, and even though that's not what we were doing there, I think it made me braver. I think it gave me the confidence to, because everyone else there is exploring too. Everyone else there is just trying stuff they want to try for the sake of trying it. You know, nobody was asking me to write an adult murder mystery novel. Yeah. And I didn't start writing it there, but I think it helped me think, yeah, why not? Yeah. Like, everybody's being daring. Why don't I?
That's awesome. And kind of leads into one of the things we want to talk about is you writing for multiple categories, mm-hmm. because that's not the most common path, right?
Right.
when you brought that up to your agent and publishers, were they like, stick to what you know? Or did you find the encouragement that you needed from them to go out and skip or bounce around between the different genres?
They were great. So my agent, I have to attribute so much of my success and the luck I've had in being able, and the support in doing other genres, is to my agent, Jody Reamer, who I've been with from the beginning. Not with Desert Book, because you don't have to have an agent right. to publish them, but since 2009 with Matched. I've been with the same agent. I've been with her the whole time. And she puts me through my paces. Have you met her, Brandon?
I think I have, but like not a ton.
Yeah. So she's 4'11". She's a fourth degree black belt. Yeah, she's just like she's just like a pistol.
She's like Murphy from the Dresden Files.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
She's super direct too, though. But she's also very supportive. So even when I went back to get the MFA, I expected a little pushback from her, just saying, you already have the job. We have mm-hmm. books that are due. And she was so supportive. She said, do it. That'll be great for you. And then with the books, she actually said, rejected tons of picture books I sent her before. She's like, these aren't good. You know, they're not.
Yeah. Just because you wrote it doesn't mean it gets published.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And she's always done that. I have novels that haven't been published. They're unsalvageable. that I thought were good. Yeah, maybe I'll write a novel called Unsalvageable at some point. But I knew that if she ever said it was good, it was. But she would also just send me back to the drawing board. Well,
I think it would be nice for our audience to hear why this is a challenge. Why agents may not want you to skip categories. Why most authors don't. And Allie and Brandon, you guys have 2 very different experiences as far as Brandon staying within a category and Allie, you bouncing around. Just talk to me why that's an issue within this industry.
I've been talking so much. I feel like Brandon
should. I can say something about this. Yes. Yeah. So, in general, if you write a book that finds an audience, at least your publishers kind of want you to write a book a year for that audience for the rest of your career, because they want, as long as that keeps connecting, mm-hmm. they want to sell a product that sells. Like, they want to provide a product that sells. They want to, if it's found a readership, they're like, yeah, keep writing for that readership. And so, like, that's creatively not the funnest idea in the world, mm-hmm. right? But with business sense, it's mm-hmm. like, okay, I see why. You know, I get the idea of like a book is a product they're trying to sell so they can be profitable and justify their positions. And for me, a book is if I am publishing professionally a book, part of the point of that is to get a return for the people who invested right. in that book, right? Mm-hmm. And so I get all that. And in my career, I've mostly, like, look, I had a middle grade fantasy, Fablehaven, that was my first published book. And I have generally written for that audience ever since. Inside of that category, I've written all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've written across the spectrum of old and young in middle grade. Mm-hmm. Like, my Beyonder series feels like the older side of middle grade. And Tales of Newland Doran feels closer to the younger side of middle grade. And my only place I stepped out of that was doing a few picture books. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But like, and so in that way, I was kind of doing the, you know, it wasn't quite like Lee Child where it's like, hey, do Jack Reacher and just do Jack Reacher. Just
yeah. You've had a lot of variants.
Like I found my character and that found its audience. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, and he might have other stuff, but there's some authors where they have their main character. Mm-hmm. That like if they know they can write for that character till the end of time if they want to and keep selling books.
Yeah, because people will buy the heck out of it.
Because people have connected with it, right? Mm-hmm. Enough people have connected with it. And so like, look, that's the practical side of it. Like that's the reason why, like, hey, if it's working, let's not break it, right? Like and they don't want, like, no one wants Lee Child to write another Jack Reacher book that's the same book. Right. You know, they want a really cool new Jack Reacher adventure. If he stops doing that, the brand will lose its momentum. But like, but people really want to see a Jack Reacher book from Lee Child. You know what I mean? And, mm-hmm. and if you started writing something totally different, there's a lot of whatever 40-year-old dads who'd be like, come on, I want to fantasize about beating up dudes in a bar. You know?
Right. I want a new bar. I want new dudes to beat up. But
With like few new twists and
there's
a new chick.
There's still new creativity, but I want Jack. Yeah.
give me that formula, right?
Yeah.
Is there an issue with agents with this as well? Because I assume agents are specializing in middle grade or thriller or whatever it is. Or are the agents broad enough where they're representing a bunch of different categories themselves?
There's a little bit of both there, right? But like, I'll tell you this, and then I'll let Ali speak to it too. Like, when I hint at wanting to go outside of middle grade, it's like, but what about middle grade? like from everybody, you know what I mean? And some of that is, like, some of that is this principle we talked about, and some of that is my natural writing voice.
Yeah,
fits middle grade a little better than certain other categories. Yeah. And so they're like they see me try a little like tinker with YA or tinker with something else. And they're like, this still kind of has your middle grade vibe though, dude. Like if you write with your natural voice, it tends to be middle grade. So why not harness that? Right.
Was that an issue with your Forbidden Mountain series where did you want that to be more young adult, or were you middle grade is what I want for this one?
Middle grade was what I was aiming for that one. That's like my next series is called the Guardian series. That's with Penguin Random House.
This is on the older end of...
It's on the older end of middle grade, but that was by design. They wouldn't have bought it if I'd said, I'm going to write it, you know, for
Newland Dorn, yeah.
But like the thing that I wrote where it was the thing I wrote in a week, mm-hmm. in the cabin or whatever, I'd written that kind of like YA. I'd written mm-hmm. that kind of like as an older vibe. And my agent, my editors were like, oh, if you took that and put it down to middle grade, like that would, you know what I mean? And so I definitely feel myself getting nudged that way for multiple reasons. And I'm not even like, I'm not bitter about it. I honestly think like I hear the feedback. I know these are very, like my agent's a guy named Simon Lipscar. He's very savvy. The editors I work with are very savvy. And I hear their feedback and go, yeah, if that's kind of my voice, I can stay in that lane. Yeah. I like writing in that voice and in that style. And so, within that voice and style, I do a wide variety of things. Yeah. So that's me. How about you?
Yeah.
Like, what's your experience with people kind of, do they nudge you towards staying in the same category when something does well, like especially matched, right? Like mm-hmm. that did so well. Like, are they like, well, do you have some more matched like stuff, or are they leaving you just like this broad creative palette? Like what's it feel like for you?
Yeah, I feel like more of the broad creative palette in the sense that I wrote a dystopian series at the perfect time, mm-hmm. right? So matched is a dystopian series. And I feel like dystopian, it's always around, but it does ebb and flow maybe a little more than fantasy mm-hmm. in that way. So I think that was probably part of why they were like, yeah, write an adult contemporary. That's selling more than dystopian now. Does that make sense? So I have been able to do a few different things.
Now, did they ask you to write that, or did you come and say, this is good timing?
Yeah, I kind of just was like, here's what I want to write. And they would say yes or no. Like, I wrote a couple books that they said no to. I wrote some that they said, yeah, you know, contemporary is working right now, so let's do that. So I do feel like I had a little more freedom, but I don't know that it was because I think it was more again, market, right? Like
Of that was that it made sense with the marketplace.
Yeah,
and it made sense with what you'd done before. And maybe this is a good next step given where the marketplace is now.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that makes lots of sense.
What's the hardest part when it comes to actual writing when you're switching categories? Do you find that you have to really change your voice? Is it like, I don't know if you're bilingual, is it like switching to a different language or anything like that? Or
no, so usually it's finding the character, and the character is the character's age, and so then it's easy.
Okay.
I mean, it's not ever easy, but you know what I mean? Like it's that character's voice, so I'm saying and doing what that character would do, and so it's appropriate to the age.
So if you're matching a 30-year-old voice...
Yeah.
And you're doing that accurately, it's going to come across as adult. And if you're matching a 17-year-old voice of that 17-year-old main character, it'll come across as YA. And for some reason, I'm good at matching 14-year-old people.
Well, the thing is you've got a 13-year-old humor, right?
Yeah,
and
so
it definitely puts you in that.
And a 13-year-old attention span, which is probably the main problem.
No, but also you have, and I don't mean this because I love teenagers, like that's my favorite, but like you have creativity in a youthful way.
Yeah.
Like I feel like you're so creative, and that is, that's the biggest gift of all, right? Is if you're able to be, so you're saying, yeah, I'm in middle grade, but you've been wildly creative in middle grade, and they're very different characters. So
yeah, lots of new ideas. I'm good at lots of new ideas and showing you some stuff you haven't seen.
But all different people, those are huge strengths. And I think that's important to notice too.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not like patting you on the head, Brandon, you don't need that, but I'm like, that's a huge thing. And your publisher and agent, if they're good, are going to always try to play to your strengths.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so for me, I think they're like, man, we don't need more. try new stuff. Do some other things.
Now, you mentioned part of going back to school was to become a better teacher. Mm-hmm. Tell me about your career in teaching, what that's looked like throughout this whole process, what you get out of teaching, why you love it. And I know you also in the past have done seminars and other things to help young writers. And just tell me about that passion you have for teaching and helping young writers.
Yeah, Brandon was so awesome because he would always come, and Brandon's a big deal. I don't know if you know that.
No, I kind of know that.
But he would,
does this podcast. It's pretty great.
No, I mean, everyone knows that Brandon's a big deal, but everyone also knows that Brandon's really generous and cares about his readers. And I remember seeing him, we went to the signing in Logan, I always talk about this, and Matched was out, and Shannon Hale and I were there, and Jessica Day George, you were there. There were just a bunch of people. And I remember, like, I had a decent signing line. It went for, you know, 2 or 3 hours, but we'd all driven up together and I was delighted. That was a huge signing line for me at the beginning of my career. And then Brandon went on to sign for more hours, like many more hours. It was in a high school and we were lying on the floor of the auditorium, the rest of the authors. We left and got McDonald's. We came back. Brandon's still signing. We laid on the auditorium floor again. But he was
he was your ride home, or you needed to wait.
Yeah, we could. We had all carpooled up in somebody's minivan because we all had minivans at that point. I can't remember whose, but I just remember looking at him and being like, he is engaged with every kid. Every kid at the end of the line is getting the same energy that the kid at the beginning of the line got. And as an author, I was dazzled by that. And as a teacher and parent, like, I'm getting a little teary. I was like, that's really special. And so when I started trying to do a writing camp for like rural Utah kids, I thought there's no way Brandon's going to say yes, but I'm going to ask because there's a lot of more cost-effective things he could do with his time. And you came every year. And every year kids signed up because of Brandon. Like, they knew his name. They may not have known the rest of the names. We had some really big authors. Soman Chainani and stuff, too. So I'm not discounting what they brought as well.
And you. Like, it was a great group of authors. Yeah.
It was a really cool group. Allie Carter. Like, yeah, really great authors. Margie Stoll, Andy Ellis, who we're friends with. But the fact, and I knew they would all be great. But, like, I also knew Brandon would be great with the kids. Like, that he would be an awesome author that would be a big draw, and also the kids would be amazing with them. And so I felt, so doing that, I just wanted to do something, because growing up, I grew up in Cedar City, which is not by like it has a Shakespeare festival. We have a college. It's not sad. It's not sad in Cedar City, you guys, who say who say stuff like, "Oh, I've been to the bathroom there on my way to Vegas." There's so much more. But yeah, I never met an author, and I started to think about like all the kids in the more rural areas, like what feeds to SUU? Like who could we maybe get that might not have, like we had kids from Colorado City, remember that? Like people that might not have access to this kind of experience. And we don't always like think about this, but diversity exists in small pockets too. Like there are gay kids, or there are kids who don't feel like they belong, or there are nerdy kids. There are kids who feel, who want to find their people in every group, all, you know, and some, and so I thought, what can we do to sort of facilitate that? And I had been a part of the Y'all Fest and Y'all West programs. And one of the cool things they did in LA was they were saying, we're going to bus kids into this festival because there are kids in LA who have never been to the beach. They've never like had met an author, even though authors come all the time to LA. And I thought, what's the version of that for the place that I'm from?
Right.
So that's kind of how I got into that. And since I taught high school, that was the natural age group for that. And then I teach at BYU. And that has been a weird, awesome thing I never thought would happen. But
how long have you been teaching at BYU?
So I just taught adjunct this last year.
Okay. Yeah.
And then I was hired as full-time faculty.
Cool.
For continuing going
forward. And what department, what
English,
classes?
Yeah, English creative writing.
Creative writing specific.
Yeah. Okay. So that, I got the master's degree being like, that would be cool to teach someday. And then my marriage ended, and unlike Brandon, I had not focused on one thing. So my career was fine, but it wasn't the revenue stream that it probably would have been if I had been as awesome at writing fantasies. And so I started looking at other avenues, and I'd been the main breadwinner for, I mean, my ex had a job, a really good job. He's also actually a professor at BYU. So great job. But I was the main breadwinner in the sense that my income was from 2009 on. Mm-hmm. And then when the marriage ended, I was figuring out, okay, I have this really up and down career, and how am I going to stabilize that sort of? Yeah. And so that's what teaching actually looked like, me wanting to do something for my, like to be engaged in a larger conversation. I was like, I'm so tired of being by myself, writing my own stuff. I'm going to teach adjunct and just get engaged again with like kids and students and all of that. And it blew my mind. And I thought, I want to do this like full time.
What a smart way to stabilize your life too, right? Yeah. Right. Right. To stabilize the income, stabilize your work, and then just give you resource. I know I've talked to Brandon about this before. Like this career of writing is very solitary.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it can be very lonely, not having like traditional coworkers and adults to talk to sometimes. And that's a smart way to do that. And in a way where you're giving back to the next generation too, which is.
Well, I mean, we say that thing about teaching a lot, right? Where like they give back to me more than I could ever give to them. And that has proven true. And I'm so lucky to be hired full time. Like I'm so lucky to have that job. So I'm delighted by that. I'm shocked by that. I'm thrilled by that. But Brandon, like you, I think have a sense of this too. Like you love talking about process and writing and stuff. So every day I get to go to BYU and there are these humans who are young and engaged and have tons of ideas and are not jaded and come from different walks of life and backgrounds. And they're like, let's talk about making stuff. And I can't think of anything like more fun as also a writer than to engage in that conversation with them.
Yeah. In some ways you get to come in and be the leader of a really cool version of playtime.
Yeah.
You know,
that's exactly what it feels like. Yeah.
Well, Allie, I think you teased our next episode where we're going to talk a little bit about your writing process and doing that. So I think it's a good place to close for today. Before we end, Allie, do you have anything that you want to plug? Any new projects that you're working on or your most recent book that's out that we should know about?
Yeah, I'd love to do that. So I just had a picture book out called There, and it's from Penguin Random House. It's the Viking imprint. And the illustrator is Jamie Kim, who's a New York Times bestselling illustrator. Her work's beautiful. So I feel it's easier to plug your picture books because you're like, oh my gosh, this other person did this crazy awesome thing. Yeah. Do you feel like that too, Brandon, with yours?
Yeah, it's nice when you're like plugging a team and not just like, But also you're writing amazing novels and you should plug them.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. So that one's really fun, and it's kind of a companion picture book to one called Here that she also illustrated, and she did the loveliest job with the illustrations. And then I have a book called The Unwedding. That's an adult murder mystery novel. Adult, most of your listeners probably know this, but doesn't mean rated R. It just means for grownups. So right. A murder mystery set in Big Sur, California, that was so fun to write. And Reese Witherspoon picked it as her book club pick. So that's been really, awesome. Really
did
exciting.
Did you see a huge bump because
I did.
Of that?
Yeah, 100%. Congratulations. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, that's great.
And how can people find you if they want to find you online?
I'm mostly on Instagram these days. Okay. I kind of bailed on Twitter a while ago. So yeah, Instagram is just Ali Condi Books, all one word.
Cool.
Awesome. Yeah. Brandon, do you have anything coming up that we need to know about?
You know what? Just the usual, like
the usual million books.
like the Tales of Newland Dorn is the most recent thing. Right. Looking ahead, there's a series called the Guardian series that'll come out next year. And then if you're trying to find me, just the normal places like Instagram, etc., Facebook stuff.
Yeah. Awesome. And we'd just like to thank all our listeners for joining us again on Mulling It Over. We do appreciate likes, stars, shares, all that stuff, leaving comments. We don't really have a big marketing push behind this podcast. So if you're listening to this podcast and you enjoy it, please tell others about it. Take a moment to just give us a 5-star review, and that really does help us out a lot. So again, Allie, we appreciate you being here. And
well, thank you, Jason. You're an amazing host. And Brandon, it's always so fun to talk with you.
Yeah, thanks for being here, Allie.
Hey there, fellow adventurers. I am Jason Conforto.
And I'm Tyler Crump, and we are hosts of a podcast, Adventure AI, where we play Dungeons & Dragons with an AI named Alex the Language Lord.
I'm Alex the Language Lord. Join us as we craft epic tales together.
Do you want to learn how to use AI in your D&D campaign?
Or how AI can force you to do things that you don't want to do? Wait a second, we don't like that.
Look no further. Adventure AI is the podcast for all your AI-powered D&D adventures.
Alex the Language Lord not only comes up with campaigns for us,
he also helps us create our characters, create our backstories, and even give us some fun magical items.
And really takes all the human aspects out of Dungeons & Dragons. So it's not really playing at all.
Follow Adventure AI on whatever platform you listen to podcasts.